I don't know if I like it.
Council meeting for Tuesday, June 11th, 2019, is hereby called to order. It's 9 a.m., and I would like to welcome everyone attending. Today, on the agenda, we have a couple of small changes, but before I get to that, I would like to ask everybody who may have electronic devices to please turn them to the silent mode today. Changes to the agenda, 3.1 under presentations. Senior Safety Coordinator Shelley Walker is unable to attend today, so we're expecting that that will be rescheduled to the next council meeting. And our 2 p.m. Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal meeting this afternoon has been canceled at their request due to obligations, and we will reschedule that at the first opportunity that we are able. Are there any other changes or additions to the agendas being circulated? Councilor Platt?
Can you just give us a reason why the Senior Safety Coordinator isn't here?
No, I just received a request that was unable and would like to do it at the next meeting if possible. Any other changes or additions? Hearing none, a motion to approve the amended agenda. Moved by Councilor Mews, seconded by Councilor McLeod. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Under 3.0 presentations today, we have 3.2, Municipal Planning Strategy, Land Use Bylaws, MPSLUB update, Upland Consulting. I would ask if representatives from Upland would please come to the presentation desk.
I'll move it over onto that one. Just sorry, my computer's being slow.
This will just automatically change the upper slides.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Sorry, my computer just reset itself. Sorry about that. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Here this morning to give you an update on the Queen's Planning for the Future project. Just a reminder, I think it's been about 6 months since we've been in front of full council. So again, my name's Ian Watson with Upland, and that's our team up there for this project. Since we were here last time, 6 months ago, we've been progressing along with the project. So we wanted to give you a little update, remind you again, why are we doing this project, go through some of the work completed to date, next steps, and then key directions for those next steps. So for, you know, members of the audience who maybe aren't familiar, the Queen's Planning for the Future project is to update the municipality's municipal planning strategy and land use bylaw, the documents that guide basically where and how development happens in the municipality. So we'll be looking at the vision for the community and then updating land use policies and regulations to go along with that, and using this as an opportunity to simplify the content and language of the regulations, make them easier to use. So over the past almost, you know, year now, we've been working on this project, developing a project brand and website, having public engagement events, including pop-ups, 7 public open houses to kick off the project, working with stakeholders through specific workshops with themes of stakeholders, and then also reaching out to individual stakeholders through email and calling. We had 2 online surveys, a resident survey and then a business survey, developed along with the Planning Advisory Committee, draft visions, goals, objectives, and then developed 6 discussion papers, which I'll touch on in a little bit, and then a policy direction paper to kind of chart the course for the next stage of the project. And then maybe a month or two ago, we were down here meeting with PAC to go through a workshop on that policy direction before releasing it to the public. I presented this last time, but just reminding you that, you know, through our engagement, a lot of what we're hearing, you know, key topics are things like coastal issues, the importance of the coast to Queens, the quality of inland natural areas, lakes and rivers, how important good infrastructure and amenities are to residents, and what they expect from a municipality in terms of those services. And then a major topic's been housing, the need for affordable, quality housing with diverse options for, you know, seniors, seasonal workers, single professionals, all different housing needs, and the need to meet those needs. Of course, seasonal residents being an important topic in the region, and always the economy. How can planning support diverse businesses, meaningful employment, and economic development in the region? So yeah, going back, so we've developed 6 discussion papers that cover, you know, population and demographics, residential development, et cetera. And basically these papers give a picture of where we are today. You know, what do we have for roads? What do we have for population? And then a little bit of a discussion where we, you know, where the data and observations expect the region to go in the future. Things like we have an aging population. And then a little bit of high-level discussion about how planning documents can and should meet those future needs. What are our needs going to be for housing, that kind of thing. And then also kind of a summary, or like taking all those 6 discussion papers further, is the policy direction paper. So I think this is like 98 different numbered items of like, how should the upcoming planning documents, you know, what are the key points of them? How should they address different topics like housing or infrastructure? And some of those recommendations are keep doing what you're doing, and some of them are tweaks that we can make for the future. And these policy direction discussion points are exactly that. They're discussion points, ideas about where we could go in the future. And so the key point of what we're looking for at this stage in the project is we want people to look at that policy direction paper and say, yes, that makes sense, no, that doesn't, let's tweak that, ooh, that's scary. Because over the next couple of months, we're actually going to be writing these documents, and that's a significant undertaking. So it'd be really nice to have a good idea of, you know, at least the drafts we're drafting up are reasonably in line with what the community expects. So those six discussion papers and then the policy direction paper are available on queensplan.com. That's the primary place we'd like to point people, but also we recognize, you know, these documents are map heavy and some of the file sizes are kind of big. So if people want to reach out to us, we will mail them a USB stick with all the documents on it, and they can make their, there's like forms to make comments on them, and they can, with a postage paid return envelope, they can send it back to us. And then there's also paper copies of all of these that we've managed to place in the Liverpool Library, the Queens North Queens Business Center, the Port Grocer, the Seaside Center, and the West Queens Recreation Center. So there's binders there that have copies of the discussion paper, copies of the policy direction document, and then copies of the forms that people can fill out to us, and they can leave them at these locations, and at the end of June we'll get these locations to mail them back to us in a envelope. So when you're out talking to your residents, please encourage them to primarily check the website, but again, these other options are available because we want feedback before we get into writing the documents. So, you know, over the month of June, the primary thing is waiting for feedback from people, but also tomorrow we'll be having a workshop with staff to kind of go into the nuts and bolts of the, you know, what are the annoying language and stuff like that in the existing documents that we can fix to make their lives easier. Waiting for direction on the, or feedback on policy direction, and then kind of over the summer, we'll be actually drafting documents. We're at that stage. I can't believe we're here already. Like, time flies. And then also, you know, we had originally planned on doing a kind of what we heard report for all the engagement at the, once we'd done all the engagement, but realizing that, yeah, you probably want to hear a paper, or you probably want to have that on paper, what we've heard so far, ahead of then. So we'll be working on an interim what we heard report this month, so that people can, you know, as they're doing the, looking at the policy direction, or as they're reviewing the drafts later this summer, that they can see, oh yeah, here's all this consultation we did, and here's what we heard, and that's informing this work that I'm reading right now. So yeah, there's a brief schedule. You know, June again, this engagement on the policy direction, over July and August, drafting, and then hopefully sometime we want to catch still some of the seasonal residents with the consultations about the draft. So hope, you know, the plan is to kind of catch the tail end of that season with our next round of thorough consultations. And all throughout this time, you know, we're still reaching out to stakeholders. I'm meeting with White Point this afternoon, and you know, looking for feedback on the policy direction from stakeholders as well. And then over the fall and winter, going through that draft review process, and then getting into the formal adoption, hopefully. So, and I just, like, again, I mentioned that policy direction paper has like 98 bullet points on different topics, but I did want to sum up some, and I encourage you all to go through it at some point. I know at least the PAC members have. But I did want to highlight some of the like big points today for council. So, you know, one of them is the idea of creating a, right now in your planning documents, you have the urban serviced areas, and then you have everything else, the rural areas. And one of the ideas is to create a third kind of community classification for the hamlets, the green fields and the Port Matoons and the, you know, the smaller communities that have a defined core but aren't necessarily serviced, and then structure planning rules around that a little bit to really recognize those communities. A big part of the recommendations are being strategic about where services and roads go, because that's a big part of municipal sustainability, and also a big part of how our communities the form of where our communities develop. Looking at implementing a coastal vertical setback, so development on the coast, accommodating sea level rise, storm surges, and we're with that one, recognizing that the province is coming out with regulations hopefully soon. So, you know, there might be an opportunity, depending on timing, to make that line up, or it might be the case of putting something in interim and then coming back and lining up with the province later. We'll see. Giving you more powers as a council, or clearer powers as a council for evaluation criteria when you have things like development agreements and rezonings, to be able to look at things like, you know, we heard a lot about concerns about species at risk or wetlands, or making sure that we're considering, you know, the natural environment in our planning evaluations. That's, the natural environment was a huge topic during consultations. Looking at finding areas that we can pre-zone for multi-unit residential development, higher different types of housing forms to accommodate the, you know, evolving needs of the community, aging populations, smaller units, that kind of thing, nursing homes, where do we put those, and making it easy so that there are places where people don't have to come for a rezoning, they can just do it because it makes sense there, and that removes a barrier. Looking at making sure we permit secondary suites, so, you know, laneway housing or carriageway housing or whatever you want to call it, granny flats, as a way to, you know, increase rental options, increase affordability options for homeowners as a second source of income. Refining commercial zoning, there's tweaks here and there, and as we look at this idea of hamlets, you know, having zones for example, the commercial core of a hamlet community. Looking at ways to encourage home-based businesses and entrepreneurialism. Refining how open space dedication happens. You know, one of the big things that came up a lot was access to the coast. People really don't want to lose access to, well, not just the coast, rivers and lakes as well. So how can our open space process, the subdivision process, support that? And then creating a kind of supportive initiatives chapter of the plan. So, you know, when we do these consultations, a lot of the things we hear from people are maybe not ideas that would go directly in a plan. Things like we want more bike lanes, for example, and those aren't necessarily something that a plan is going to, the development regulations are going to make happen, but it's related. So you might want to do an active transportation plan, for example. So creating a chapter at the back that kind of has all these things we've heard from people that are important and are related but aren't directly in something you put in a plan, and then that can inform you as a council when you're doing your strategic planning for the future. You got a list there that's like your starting point.
If I could, when would you like to have some questions?
Right now.
Councilor Johnson?
It's really good. Good job on this. I'm sure it will cure insomnia if you try to read every page of
that. Yes.
But to that end, I'm really pleased to see that you included in here the age-friendly community work that we did in partnership with Queens Care Society.
Yeah.
And the only other thing that I'd ask, and it didn't get mentioned, how close are you linked to the branding exercise we're going through? Because I think that's a huge opportunity to marry these two big initiatives together.
Yeah, so thank you for the question and through the chair. Yeah, we are aware that work's going on, and not just that work either, but also your work with the Liverpool waterfront in terms of climate change adaptation, and also your economic development work that's going on right now. So as we're getting to this drafting stage, this is a real opportunity to bring that in, to bring those in, make sure they're all rowing in the same direction, so to speak.
Councillor Fisk?
Just a quick question, very good presentation. The hard copies, I noticed where you have them distributed in different areas.
Yep.
I noticed that Greenfield was left out, and that's a very highly populated area for cottage country. The main source of our employer is Greenfield Mill.
Yep.
Raymond's Mill. And I would like to see some distributed there if possible.
Okay. Yeah, through the chair, I do have one more physical copy. We couldn't find a good spot to do one there. If you have a recommendation.
Library.
The library, the Greenfield.
The library there with the rec center.
But their hours are really limited.
There's two major stores that they replace.
Okay.
The library's fine, but I think the population is just ours.
Okay, so yeah.
And maybe the rec center also, there's over, you know, membership in the rec center over 200.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll maybe send you an email after this and you can give me the good contact and I will get, I have one more physical copy that I can, we'll get to them.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other counselor at this time? Counselor McLeod?
Thank you, Ian. It's been a good project.
Yeah.
Starting off, we had some public meetings to get a vision idea and that sort of thing from various points of our county. And I understand that once all of these documents are prepared and you come up with a basic draft form of the final documents, then you'll be going to a public consultation again in different communities. And then you hope to get some feedback at that point from the residents again.
Yeah, so through the chair, we will, yeah, so just a reminder, when we kicked off this project, we did 7 communities, one in each district, basically, to get general ideas and to understand people's needs and concerns better. So when the drafts are come out, they will go be on the project website, and again we'll be doing that. Those 7 communities, again, will be back out having some form of open house or workshop to go through what are the major changes and how will they affect your community, and how do we need to adjust these drafts. So absolutely.
You'll probably have an opportunity to, on your website, to review what you've come up with and
absolutely.
Get their input.
And our hope is by the time we get to the actual formal required public hearing,
mm-hmm.
that is just a formality.
Yes.
And if no one shows up and says anything, we've done our job kind of thing. So, yeah.
Counselor Fancy?
Yes, I like that. The one thing that tweaked me was the looking at possibly having an active transportation plan. Because we, as you know, with the aging population, they don't want to just sit in the house or go to Tim's and McDonald's. You want to get out and be able to live a fuller, more active life. And as we've discussed here before, with roads, our roads are most of them are narrow. You know, because they were meant just for traffic and just barely getting by when you meet each other. That you have to plan for the future, what you're going to do, not just a blue route or anything like that, the bicycling, but to have it so even though like a wheelchair can be able to be taken in different areas and things like that, that we start planning ahead with everything we do, and even up around Queens Place, we plan lanes that we can be able to take wheelchairs into and things like that, so we can have a more active life and for the younger people too. As you would know, as you go through town, you find that we only have the one road that goes over town, and that's really narrow. You get a bicycle on there.
Yeah.
It's not a fun place to drive a bicycle.
Well, and one of the things with those plans too is that in the rural communities, if you have a transportation plan that identifies bicycle routes, when DTIR, when the province is doing their road upgrades, they will look at a municipal plan and say, "Oh, okay, we'll widen the shoulder there. That's a bike route." So those are good things to have, for sure.
So that's going to be part of your...
It wouldn't be part of our work, but we'll put...
Part of your recommendation?
Yeah, we'll put things like that in that strategic planning chapter that, you as a council can say, oh, this was a priority when we were out talking to people for the plan review. Maybe we can add that to our work plan for the future.
Okay, thank you.
Ian, I have a fair number of questions. Should I be sending those all to the email address, or
would
you be talking to counselors prior to the end of June?
Depends on how you'd like. Yeah, I can give you a call if you'd like, or
okay.
Yeah, whatever's easiest for you.
I have a fair number, so
yeah.
I don't want to hold up
okay.
this whole presentation.
Yeah.
But, thank you very much.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, thank you. We'll resume.
All right, thank you.
Yes.
to 4.0, taking up petitions. We have no petitions to table today. Are there any petitions to table today? Second call for petitions. Third and final call for petitions. We have no petitions today. 5, public question comment session. This is an opportunity for members of the gallery to pose a question or comment. Please state your name, your address, and limit your comments to 5 minutes or less, please.
I've been sure. Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Leon Robertson, College Street in Liverpool. First item here, the lines that were changed over here at the Waterloo Street and here on the Whitefront Road. It's set up a dangerous situation. I've noticed near accidents here because you go around and follow those lines, and the other people don't, you come head on. It's an accident waiting to happen, and I understand maybe that'll be looked at and possibly changed.
It's being reviewed by engineering and work staff, and there is an indication that there will be some adjustments to that.
Yeah, there will be an accident, I'm pretty sure.
Well, don't be that sure now, Leon.
I hope not. The next item is, I heard you on the radio, I believe it was there, with respect to the community investment fund, and with the possibility of looking at it, taking another look at it, and even the possibility of tweaking it. Is that still in the radar?
It's expected that between now and next year that fund will have small changes made to it to make it more workable for those applicants that are on.
And under 10.1, I see the minister has changed his mind with respect to cost sharing on the old 42 road paving. Very interesting.
It is helpful. It's very helpful to the region of Queens that they are cost sharing that.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Leon. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak today?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council.
If you would state your name and address.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm going to keep it a secret. My name is Barb Fry, and I live at 40 Beachfront Lane. When Cook Aquaculture's pens at Coffin Island are full, I worry about the quality of the water at Beach Meadows Beach. I worry about whether or not this beautiful beach is a safe place for my grandchildren to play and swim. I need to know that these waters are free from toxins and fish excrement. To that end, I got on the phone yesterday, and I spent almost 3 hours trying to find out who does what in terms of looking at the quality of the water. I contacted federal departments, provincial departments, all kinds of departments. I've got tons of all over the place. So I'm looking to you. Can you tell me if you know how frequently the water at the beach is tested, what is being measured, who conducts the testing, and where I may find the results?
Well, I can give you a partial answer. Environment Canada had been testing water quality along most beaches in Nova Scotia for many, many years. They were doing that to protect the food source, such as clams and such. They discontinued doing that testing on many locations in 2015. It is now an issue in 9 beaches in Shelburne County where the quality of the water is unknown, and commercial clam harvesters are not able to dig on those sites and ship to the USA or to processors because of that. It's a shared responsibility with provincial environment, with fisheries and aquaculture for the province of Nova Scotia. And of course, I'm sure each one's budget expects them to ask someone else to do that work. So at this point, I don't have a precise answer for you, but I would suggest that in the situation of aquaculture, provincial fisheries and aquaculture division in Shelburne should be able to point you in a more direct contact with people that should be doing. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak today? Mr. Cox?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Bill Cox, 121 Bob Road, Point Point. Just a couple of questions. A little over a year ago, I asked a question regarding the emergency response plan. And at that time, Richard McCullen was the CIO, and he was assured me that that would be in place or at least brought to council by the fall, and following the agendas and the press, I have not seen any further update in regard to an emergency response plan. Is this still in the works? Is it still inside or where are we?
I don't have an update for you today. I do know that our EMO committees are working diligently on a regular basis. If the CAO would like to give us a very brief update as to where we are, that would be helpful if you have one.
Sure. Are you referring to the EMO plan?
The emergency response plan. So do you have a accident regarding tankers on the 103, or you have somebody runs into a truck downtown that has this waste or whatever? Who responds? How do they respond? And what do you do with people that you have to turn over to the area shelter? I believe that this started with the Federal Department of Security, and they passed it down to the province, and the province put it out to municipalities, and everybody was supposed to have a plan in place, I think, by 2021. And I was just wondering if we have such a thing, and if we have, we should be giving this out to the public, so that if that little beeper goes off on your phone or your radio or whatever, you know that there's a place that you could go or what have you, so that people aren't running in a half dozen different directions because all they do is interfere with the first responders. And secondly, in regard to the study that was being carried out on the waterfront in regard to the flooding and so forth, when will this report be available, and do we have a progress report today?
That is still a work in progress. I'm expecting that early fall we should have that finalized. We did at council have a interim discussion a few meetings back on the progress of that, and they are working diligently on water level increases and such over the next 30 to 50 years and laying out potential possibilities for mitigation. So that is still ongoing. And as far as the emergency response, I know that that's probably a new question to our CAO.
We've had the EMO plan forever, so it's not a new thing. It's not, I guess your question, when are we going to have it? We already have one. We've had it for a long time. And so the committee, we have a bylaw that regulates what we're required to do because it's required by legislation. We have a bylaw, we have a committee. We do have two coordinators, an emergency measures coordinator and assistant. So we do have two staff that are essentially honorary. They're part-time employees that coordinate that stuff. They meet with all the emergency service providers every couple months. And they do, the last time we had a meeting, we had a draft or an exercise of sorts. There's opportunities for training for our responders on a regular basis. It's hard to find, to get people, especially if they're volunteers, to take training, because it's usually over several days. That work is ongoing, and so the plan is there. But the plan changes every time we meet, because there's updates given to the plan. And the plan is about that thick, so it's not something we would post on our website. There's a lot of confidential information in there as well. But I can assure you, if there's an emergency in the community that needs response, that the people that are trained to do that are ready to respond. Requires evacuation, things like that, but those people are aware of what that system looks like and how it goes about, how we contact people. So all those things are in place. And of course, we hope we never have to use it, but we recognize that there will be times when we do. And so those, you know, those provisions are all in place. It's just not something that's a public document that a member of the public's going to go through and read and understand and comprehend and be able to apply it. But certainly all of our different emergency service agencies are involved, and just be on a regular basis to make sure when the time does come, they are prepared.
Thank you. If I may, just one more item in regard to the Old Fort Boone Road. I'm very pleased to see that funds that you need to GIO to upgrade that particular road. And I was hoping that the money might go into gravel for the bog road, but I see that it's only the concrete, so I'll have to look for another.
Thank you. Any other member of the gallery? Yes.
Ann Laws, 1901 Reynolds Road. Good morning, Madam Council, and I hope you don't cringe from seeing me. Because I know that it's important for the public to recognize when councillors have felt put on the spot, and so I recognize that, and I don't want hard feelings or anything like that. So I say, please bear with me. I'm not here today for a negative message.
No hard feelings.
I'm here again today. Of course, I always speak about the coast, right? And it's good. It's timely today where Uplands is here. But of course, you know that World Oceans Day was Saturday. And I'm not here on behalf of PLB, but I want you to know I took part in the rally, of course, because I'm a core group member there. But just to again say to you, thank you. I know that the vote here wasn't unanimous with regard to standing protection of the bay. But I do want to thank those of you who did vote that way. For the ones who were opposed, that is certainly your right. But I want, for those who continue to kind of support that stance, and as council you voted that way, I want to let you know that I think that citizens in many municipalities, I know especially here, are seeing you as environmental heroes. Because how many comments have come my way that where people have said, I wish everyone had the support of their municipality as you do in looking for environmental protection, especially with regard to aquaculture and marine-based open net and ferns. So I guess I wanted to say to you, please recognize that those algal blooms that killed 11,600 tons of farmed salmon in Norway, that was reported on May 22nd, would speak to your good decision. That the British newspaper The Guardian that just released an article that said climate crisis and antibiotic use could sink the fish farm industry. That makes sense that you're in front of that. Health Canada, it's unbelievable to me, really, but of course, you know, sea lice is a huge issue, and because they say it's not an issue in Nova Scotia, although we have a document that says that sea lice are here, not necessarily at the Copper Mountain site, but somewhere, the site wasn't specified, but that right now, within the industry, the sea lice problem is so, so bad, and slice, and none of these chemicals are controlling it, that there's a new insecticide that their Health Canada is looking at reviewing and possibly registering. And it's called, excuse me, Mayor, you know all the words, so you can correct me. It's Lufenuron, L-U-F-E-N-U-R-O-N. And it is actually an insecticide that has been used for human lice. Now, that has been used, even though it hasn't, it's still under review, on an emergency application by CIRMAC in Clayoquot Sound, and that's BC. They used it for 6 months. Now, here's the problem with it. There's a lot of problems with toxins, you know. Health Canada says a 350-day washout before you or I should be eating that fish that's harvested. 350 days. So, you know, I just put that out there because I think that if you're, as a council, you know, you voted that consensus to protect Liverpool Bay, I hope that gives you some sense of peace of mind that says, we are so in front of this thing. We're so in front. And if you're, you know, personally, the other councillors, recognize that the problems in the industry are so, so huge.
And I respect all of you, and I just want to be a person who comes to you and is able to bring concerns for my family who lives in Beach Meadow, anybody who uses the beach, the future generations. So I hope you know where I come from, and I thank you for the consensus vote of 5-3. And I hope that, I'd like to know where, if the CAO, have you brought back the information that was requested by Deputy Mayor Kelly, that as to how your voice will be heard in all of this?
I can answer that.
Okay, sure.
There has not been a document brought to open council on this, and certainly I also want to point out that a majority decision of a motion at council creates a policy for council.
Okay.
So it is embraced by all of council.
Okay.
Once they pass the majority.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yes.
Eric Golden, 1036 Brooklyn Shore Road. I bet you thought I was going to talk about fish farms. just one thing on the fish farms, then I'm going to move on anyway. I'm very, very disappointed that we cannot get factual information, and that our Joel Richardson and Glenn Cook continually call us misinformed, ill-informed, whiners, and so on and so forth. And they come back and they say they answer all the questions and they have a beautiful relationship with the people of Liverpool. And I'm not sure that any of the answers that they've come up with yet have solved or answered any of the questions that we have asked. And those are questions very specifically to the beach itself and to the fish that was lost this winter. And so on and so forth. The government is withholding all of that information. How can we be less than ill-informed? How can we be less than ignorant when nobody will educate us on what's going on? I'm going to leave that subject. My second subject is, and I talked to Alphonse about this, and I will be continuing to push on it on that subject, but I need two cell phones. Neither one of them are working that good because we have a tower, I think out at Midway and the tower at White Point. I drive the circuit from Milton to here. I talk to the technicians, and the signal is very weak along that that particular corridor. There's a need for new towers. 5G is coming up. 5G is going to be an amazing technology. It will equal the playing field from urban to rural and so on and so forth. The concerns about 5G, I assume, like every other technology, including the car at one time, was, oh my God, what's this going to do to us? Is this going to kill us? There was, you know, having wireless in the schools was a big deal a few years ago, magnetic fields and so on and so forth. I don't know if people realize or not, but when you go to an underground parking lot, you're getting bombarded with the same wireless signal as you are on the side. When you walk down the hall in a hotel, you can see that little blinking light in the corner. All of those are signals that it's there. One of the problems with 5G is that the signal is actually attenuates more than less. And that's why they require more towers, more places, and so on and so forth. So I would like to see in the Uplands report a strategy for how you are going to manage the wireless business, which is going to be a huge, it will be your future. All you have to do is look at your kids, and you know what the future is going to be. It's a wireless future on that side of things. The latency on 5G is almost none. So the autonomous cars and everything else will require that type of technology. You don't want to have even a nanosecond of latency when you're about to hit that next car. You want that to be immediate, and that's the type of technology that 5G is. So there's a lot of reasons not to approve a tower, I agree. But on the other side of things, if it's a real estate thing or an eyesore, that is not a reason to not approve a tower. These towers are all over the place. You just have to look around any other major city, and you'll see those towers and antennas on everything. And there's a reason for that. They need to be there. not a good idea that you'll have a plan in place and perhaps even assist East Link and anybody else that wants to put a tower up, assist them in saying, this is where you can put your towers. We think you'll have your best coverage there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any other member of the gallery today? Well, thank you very much. We will move on to 6.0, approval of minutes. 6.1, regular council minutes of May 28th, 2019. Are there any errors or omissions in those minutes as circulated? Hearing none, a motion to approve those minutes would be in order. Moved by Council Krellick, seconded by Council McLeod. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Under 7.0, dangerous or unsightly premises, we have nothing to bring forward today. Under 8.0, economic development, we have 8.1, request by Social Flying Club to sublease land, and I would ask our Director of Economic Development, Jenny Rocket, to come forward.
Good morning.
Good morning. Councilor Fisk, if you want to take the lead on 8.1.
Thank you. I so recommend that the Council of Regent Queens municipality authorize SoShore Flying Club to sublease land of the municipality at SoShore Regional Airport, designed as those lands for future hangar development, and that the SoShore Flying Club be authorized to collect such rent as applicable with the usual hangar rental for each hangar being remitted to the municipality, and any sublease not be for a term of more than 10 years, with a right of termination by the municipality for any reason whatsoever, with 24 months' notice.
Second to that motion, Councilor Johnson. Jenny, would you like to give us a brief update?
Sure. So as you know, the region has been in a long-term lease agreement with the South Shore Flying Club for land located at the airport that was for the purposes of the construction of hangar space. There's currently two hangars on the site. According to the lease, there's room for six. One is privately owned and they do use it for storage. And the drag racers use the other one, but there's no additional space for members to store their planes. So they recently requested that they have an ability to sublease the land because they don't have, like financially, they're unable to raise the money to build those hangars themselves. But there are members of their organization who would like to build and store their hangars there. So they're looking to sublease land for that purpose, and they would charge a fee for the land. They would submit the rental fee that's in the lease to us, and then it would also give them an opportunity to generate some income from that. And any sublease would have to be aligned with the current leases that are in place with the Drag Racers Association as well as the Flying Club.
Any questions or comments on this issue? Councilor Phillips?
So the two hangars that are there now, are they paying a fee to be there? I'm confused about
I think
we're collecting the money from the new hangars?
If you'd like, Jenny, I might need to clarify
that. Sure.
When the Flying Club originally leased the sites for six potential hangars, they, in that agreement, were required to pay for the first hangar lease upon signing of the agreement. So one can be constructed without an additional cost. The other two hangars that exist at the airport are outside of this area for the six leased hangar sites. So their cost in their actual lease includes the price for one hangar, which does not exist on those six sites.
So how are they, what's the ability for them to make money?
So they would be able to charge more they would sublease that for a higher fee than what they are expected to remit to us.
Oh.
Yeah.
Councilor McLeod?
That was a portion of my question, and when you say, so that they have a certain area that they're leasing.
Mm-hmm.
And within that area that they're currently leasing, there are two hangars?
Yes.
That they had access to and they own?
No, they don't own either of them.
Okay, who owns the hangar? Private individual?
Mm-hmm. I think one is private.
I think one is ours. Do we own? Yeah.
Okay.
And the drag racers use one.
Which is the region's?
Yes, I think so.
And then the other one is owned by one of the members of the...
I do believe the drag racers are using that, so I'm not sure.
Yeah,
of that.
And I'm not 100% sure either, but I know that they don't have any
question.
Of their own hangars. Yeah.
The reason for asking is if they add more opportunities for more hangars, then that indicates that their flying club is growing.
Yes.
Which is a really good thing for the airport and for the land use. So outside of their leased area, do you expand the lease area to accommodate these buildings or these?
The flying club has two leases, one for the
yes.
airport and one, well, actually three leases.
Oh.
One for the airport, one for the terminal building, and one for the area for six hangars.
Oh, okay.
So they have room for six hangars on pre-allotted lease.
So what they want to do is sublease those. So that's the reason
yes.
for this. They can build their own and use it for their own purposes, but they want to build and then sublease to make some extra revenue.
Yes,
right.
If the flying club could, if they had the money,
mm-hmm.
then they could build hangars on that space.
Yes.
But because they don't, they're looking to sublet that land. And it could be to a member who's
mm-hmm.
interested and has, you know, the personal finances to
okay.
to build that.
So with that comment then, that they could personally build something, does that mean they own... Who becomes the owner of that?
So they would own the hangar.
Hangar.
Yeah.
On land that they're leasing.
And there would be, I think there's a requirement in the lease, like if we took it over and then those would have to be removed if we weren't using it for that purpose.
Generally they're Quonset hut kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay, so they're very mobile, basically. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Deputy Mayor Kelly?
I think I answered my own question. I was just about not being familiar with these types of leases. I can surely understand what's happening on that property, the reason for 10-year leases and 2 years notice for changes on that land. So that's.
Any other councillor have a question or comment? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? Unanimous. Thank you very much. And 8.2, provincial facade and beautification program. Do you want to handle that?
Richard is going to actually.
Oh, Richard?
Yes.
Okay. I would ask Richard Lane to come forward if you would.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sean.
Yes.
So the initial period for application to the Business Facade Program closed May 31st. On May 29th, we heard that we were unsuccessful in our application to the province for the top-up funds. If you remember, Council committed $25,000 to this program with a hope that was going to be topped up by match funding from the province. I have spoken to the department, and as far as they were willing to share, there was no problem with the application. It was simply a matter of capacity, so it was a competitive program. The money that they had available was oversubscribed to, and so our application was not successful. By May 31st, we had 12 applications to the facade program. One of those has withdrawn, so we have 11 applications. there isn't really a fixed hard number on that, because it depends slightly on whether all aspects of the applications are eligible and so on and so forth. But roughly speaking, the total ask at the moment is in the region of $41,500. For at the moment, we have $25,000 for that pot.
Any questions or comments of councillors? Deputy Mayor Kelly.
Sorry, just repeat that last part again. There's $41,500 in applications, and we have how much in our?
25.
We only have the $25,000.
That's what council committed in budget.
So what's the plan?
There are several applications that have no issues associated with them. So the applications were complete, and all the work that was applied for is eligible. If we approved those applications right now, we would fit under the $25,000 limit, but it would leave that would be for five applications out of the 11 remaining. So we would have six applications that would have no funding. An alternative would be to reduce the amount that is given to each project, or another outcome would be that the amount of money made available to the program would be increased.
Richard, you're saying that the funding from the province is not available. Are they discontinuing that program, or are we outside the criteria?
Neither of those, really. So the program continues, and the application, as far as I can tell, was good. But they had between 40 and 50 applications to that program for a maximum of $25,000 each, with a total pot of $500,000. So if all of the applications, and probably most of them, would have been towards that $25,000, that only supports 20 applications. Mm-hmm. And if they had 40 to 50, we did receive that money last year, it may be that other areas of the province were given priority to them.
So is there any way to approach the province in the future, knowing the demand for that, concerns for small communities in these areas to put the pressure on to increase their budget for that? Is that community do that?
I'm sure we could certainly make delegation for that, but yeah, they have to be fair and equitable across the province.
Yes,
so
I understand that, yeah.
Ms. Captain Phil?
I guess I'm going to direct this question to the chair, to the CAO, and what his recommendation would be. I know that when we opened this up to the county, it was with the expectation that we wouldn't have enough people fly from our downtown. So clearly this has opened up a bigger issue. So I'm wondering what he sees as a solution to.
CAO?
I'm not familiar with where the location of the applications are from, but if we have $41,000 in asks, it doesn't necessarily mean all $41,000 of projects are going to go forward. We had the same experience last year where we had lots of applications, and a bunch of them went through, we didn't complete the project, and we're eligible anyway. So,
sure.
So at this point in time, I would suggest we allocate the best we can, the $25,000 we have, to the best projects, the ones that are that meet the criteria. Have the other ones available, and some money is freed up in the province, or some of those ones that are apply and receive funding don't complete the projects, or decide after they get approval that they've changed their mind or they've lessened the project, then that frees up a little bit of money to take the next one on the application list. We'd like to be able to fund them all, but in reality, this is the first stage with May 31st, and so if we were to put some more money in the pot, you may be putting more money in the pot all year because you may need more applications during the year, and then we're going to be chasing our tails, and we're going to get in trouble because we'll end up $50,000, $75,000, and so on and so forth. So I think we do the best we can with the $25,000, and then at this point in time, we have budgeted $50,000, based on 25% profit, only $41,000, so we're not oversubscribed. We're just unfortunately didn't get provincial money at this point in time.
And in your experience, is there any way to rally the provincial government to reconsider that, or is it kind of a done deal?
In this particular case, it's got $500,000 resolved and allocated, and I expect that because of the 27 projects approved, that the money is gone, those people are going to do those projects. So if there's any slippage, as they call it, it'll come in March, which is going to be too late anyway, or February, so it won't be of any use to us. Now, to Councilor McLeod's point, if this is a political decision, and so if there's some pressure you want to apply and ask the province to up that pot from $500,000 to $1 million or something, that would be a letter to the minister and express the importance of the project to downtown communities and small urban areas that we get two times, three times, four times the economic impact that will spend to take place. And so the letter would be directed, I would suggest, to the minister to encourage him to, in future years, to make that pot a bigger pot.
Can I ask one more question? So I've always questioned, you know, the downtown portion of this. Are other people using it the way we're using it? Because we've expanded to the whole county. So would that have any reflection on our application? Because the way I understand it, and maybe I'm wrong, is that this beautification is meant to encourage downtown growth. So would that have a play in the response?
If I may, just talking to my colleagues around the province, if you look at the ones that have been approved, very few of them are facade programs.
No.
Most of them are signage, planters, street lights. And last year when we applied, we put some stuff in there for signage. We put some of the old fairground fountain. We put a few of those things in there.
Yeah.
And whether that hit the scale last year or whether we were lucky, I'm not sure. But if you look at my discussions with the other municipalities, most of them aren't in the facade business. They're in the actual money for themselves. So they're doing streetscape work, they're doing street lights, as I said, they're doing signage, they're doing flower pots, they're doing those types of things. And that's those are the ones that, if you look at the list, those are the ones most of them have received funding.
So the importance of the downtown facade side of it should be stressed in the letter to the minister or whoever. If we actually do.
Yeah, because carrying on from that as well then, I mean, when you talk about municipalities requesting the money and using it for beautification, streetlights and flower pots and all that kind of stuff, then that's a set amount of money. But when we're talking about the facade program, the money that we put in last year, you know, returned in development of our downtown of over $100,000. Wasn't that we quoted over $100,000 for less than a $50,000 because we didn't use all the money last year, did we?
No, we didn't.
So over $100,000. So what I'm looking at now is that $25,000 and looking at your criteria and how you put that $25,000 out is really, again, to take into consideration how much investment that's being put in by the business owners to get back the most improvement for the least amount of money. And almost to the point that, you know, I guess putting the $25,000 out, but at a future point looking at putting that other $16,500 in from the region, if we could find somewhere knowing what kind of impact that was going to have on our business and our business district as well.
And the total value of those 11 applications again is upwards of $100,000 of investment.
That's amazing for that.
Councilor McLeod?
We're talking provincial contributions here in the partnership between municipal and provincial. Is there anything from the federal level that you could access as topping up this type of fund?
I'm not aware of that.
Under the community programs?
Not aware.
In the past, we discussed the Business Improvement District model, and I know that years ago that was held here. We had the Business Improvement District, and then we had the Main Street program, two separate programs. The Main Street program was used for facade improvements and looked at this in a specific area in Liverpool, the downtown core. And then the business improvement district was a small fee paid by the businesses in a certain area that was used for marketing and helping promote their businesses. But is it possible to review that again and see possibly in the future we might be able to generate some kind of partnership with the businesses so that they contribute a little bit and they maybe then sort of combine these two programs together?
It was certainly something that was on the table a while ago. The appetite amongst the businesses didn't seem to be terribly strong for forming a business improvement district.
But we have new business owners now. We
have
new people that have a real it's amazing what's happening on our main street, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe we could revisit that again.
It would be an initiative, certainly primarily of the business
owners. And that
would
go to your department?
I think
and the chamber?
I think the chamber would have to be involved in that, or at least a business group formed of the businesses that would form that district. Yeah, we could certainly help and facilitate.
Yeah.
Councillor Fancy?
Yes, Richard, along with that, of course, we didn't get the money this year from the provincial, but looking forward to this in the future, there were, as you said, there were 27s and there were only 40 some, so over 50% of the people did get the money. Is that, do you see any pattern to why? Is it because of the time frame of when they were they applied for it, or is it just something is looking forward to saying like, we don't get to miss out again next year, or do you see a pattern to where the money went?
As the CAO said, we're not party to the other applications much other than just anecdotal conversation. And as Chris said, also whether we were successful previously because we were lucky or that it was less subscribed to the fund, or whether the criteria for the streetscaping and beautification program was less about facade programs and more about streetscaping by the municipality. Yes, that's something that we need to, we need to think about for subsequent applications.
And along with that, because we didn't get to this year, that doesn't bring us to a top list for next year. It's a whole new thing.
It's a competitive program each time. Yeah.
Any other councillor?
So if we decided today as councillors that we wanted to top that up to meet the 41, to add the 16, to get to the point that we can satisfy all that, after hearing the numbers, after reading the Uplands report, after understanding how important the business community is, and we want to make it a priority, and that if people are actually willing to invest their money along other thing, could that be done? As we always said, we will have to find the money somewhere. But
there's two issues with your question. One, we have a number of applications, some are which are not complete and do not quite meet the program at this point, I understand. So there is a priority effort to look at those applications, which may or may not get us below the 25,000 and resolve the issue according to the fund. And the other issue is we're not able to make a motion today to spend dollars. So it wouldn't be in order today.
Okay, I understand that part. But if it was the will of council to be able to do that at some point, we could do it. Because I don't believe we should be looking at these applications with the goal of trying to get below 25. We should be looking at them, how can we help these businesses achieve what they're doing. And you're not going to be able to do that with an open mind if you have to keep below 25, because somebody's going to get crossed off that has really good intentions. And that was the goal of this program from the start, was to motivate the business community to get involved. So, and there'll be other things come along for $16,000 that we'll approve if it's a study or something in the next year. And this is a really important one. Something that they've asked, we've asked, and I think we should look at ways to accommodate everyone.
Understood. Any other counselor have a question or comment? Well, hearing none, I thank you both, Jenny and Richard, for your presentations today, and we'll look forward to see how the SOD program homework goes for the next couple of weeks.